let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. You know, I've talked about this multiple times on this show over the past few weeks, and I realized I never did an episode on it, like fully. And that's inflation. It is a major topic in the news right now. I am staring at inflation or charts and trends of inflation every day at work, and it's just a constant conversation that we have to have because I work in strategic planning, and I work in the insights and analytics department, or on the insights and analytics team, and we have to monitor inflation and see how it'll affect, you know, costs down the line. But I never did an episode of it on this show. And really what pushed me to do this was a video I saw by Johnny Harris, formerly of Vox. He has his own YouTube channel now, and he did a 6-minute explainer of what is inflation. Now, Johnny's a really smart man. He knows a lot of things. He has a lot of experience. He's a very talented journalist and a very talented storyteller. However, his explanation to me is very academic in a way, and I take nothing away from him. He's got a degree in economics, so he's already a step ahead of me. A lot of my business education has been on the job, but he provides an explanation that is very technical, very simple, and kind of rose-colored glasses in a lot of ways. It looks at market forces alone and just puts those as the cause of inflation. And to a degree, he is true. There are broader macroeconomic forces that go on. But what he didn't do in that video, and I think it does a disservice, is he doesn't look at the lens of, he talks about demand pull, he talks about cost push, but he doesn't talk about kind of the way that corporate greed has influenced inflation today, specifically inflation in Canada, and how that inflation is a result of forces that are not, like, we're using traditional economic thinking when the situation we've been presented with is so out of the realm of possibility and so historically different that it bucks a lot of historical trends. And I'm talking about COVID, because COVID plays a huge, huge role in inflation currently and the reaction to COVID and the behavior during COVID have really had a demonstrable impact on where inflation has gone with respect to corporate greed. Now, I want to just give a high-level explanation of what forces impact inflation, or what kinds of inflation there can be. But really, what you need to know is that there are ebbs and flows of the economy. There are good times and there are bad times, booms and busts. There are times when people are spending and things are good. Things, you know, we're keeping up with the demand, and there are times when we're not keeping up with the demand, and prices fluctuate largely depending on those forces. One of those forces is demand pull inflation. This is inflation caused by demand pull. So demand pull inflation arises when the demand for goods and services increases to exceed the supply of goods and services that can be produced. So that is when a demand for a product is higher than our ability to actually produce that product. Think of, you know, Furbies and Beanie Babies. If you want a modern example, think about currently what's happening in the automotive industry. There is a chip shortage because there is a shortage in and issues with the supply chain. There are ongoing issues with getting components to make the chipsets that are required to run the computers in newer vehicles. So you can actually drive past a lot of lots and they won't have the 2022 or 2023 versions of vehicles because they haven't been able to make them, because there are vehicles sitting in factories that do not have the correct chipsets and are not able to be operated because they don't have the pieces required. And what that's done is the individual pieces, the individual units that are able to ship because they are able to get in enough chips to push out those vehicles, the cost of those vehicles are skyrocketing. Think about the new, I'm a gamer, and one of the major issues we've had currently in the gaming industry is a lack of chips to put into newer game consoles and specifically graphics cards for PCs. The new RTX 30, well, not new, they're old now, but the 3080s and 3090s are extreme, like they're thousands of dollars because the components that go into them to make them are not available. So they're not able to make enough to actually sell them. So what that's doing is it's causing scarcity in the market, which is driving up prices. And then to turn back to the automotive example, what that's doing with the new vehicles being so scarce, that's driving up demand for used vehicles. I get emails probably weekly from a dealership that I go to for services. It's not the dealership I bought my car from, but it's the one I go to get them to service it because I drive a Mazda, and it's a Mazda dealership. I get emails from them probably weekly offering me 110% of what the value for my car should, the market value of my car should be. So they're offering to pay me more for a car that is 7 years old at this point, because they'll be able to turn around and sell it for even more. So it is, the price has increased on two sides. The cost, the price that I will be able to sell my car for to the dealership has increased. And then because they need to make a profit, the price that the next person to buy that vehicle will have to pay is even further increased from that. The markup from what they paid me for it will be exponentially higher. So that's inflating the prices of goods and services. It's inflating the prices of vehicles across the board. Because we can't make new vehicles, it's making those ones that we are able to make more expensive, and it's making the ones that already exist in the secondary, the used market, even more expensive. Here's a bit more of a technical explanation. Aggregate demand might increase because there is an increase in spending by consumers, businesses, or government, or an increase in net exports. So demand increasing because of those. As a result, demands for goods and services will increase relative to their supply, providing scope for firms to increase prices. At the same time, firms will seek to employ more workers to meet this extra demand. With increased demand for labor, firms may have to offer higher wages to attract new staff and retain their existing employees. Firms may also increase the prices of their goods and services to cover their higher labor costs. More jobs and higher wages increase household incomes and lead to a rise in consumer spending, further increasing aggregate demand and the scope for firms to increase the prices of their goods and services. When this happens across a large number of businesses and sectors, it leads to an increase in inflation. So it's this circular, this kind of circular relationship, right? It all feeds back in this feedback loop. Prices go up, demand goes up, so you need to make more things. You hire more people, that increases your costs, so you need to increase the price, that you increase wages to attract more people, that increases spending even more, so more money goes into the system, and the prices can increase, and it just increases and increases and increases. So the opposite will happen when aggregate demand decreases. Firms facing lower demand will either pause hiring or make staff redundant, which means that fewer staff are required. This puts upward pressure on the unemployment rate. More workers searching for jobs means that firms can offer lower wages, putting downward pressure on household incomes, consumer spending, and the prices of their goods and services. As a result, inflation will decrease. That's kind of what we were facing for a while coming out of COVID. Or during COVID, people were not working or not being hired, so spending went down, and in order to keep making money, prices had to come down in order to facilitate more spending from in the pool of money that was left. So cost push inflation is different. It occurs when the total supply of goods and services in the economy, which can be produced, falls. A fall in aggregate supply is often caused by an increase in the cost of production. If aggregate supply falls, but aggregate demand remains unchanged, there is upward pressure on prices and inflation. That is, inflation is pushed higher. So an increase in the price of domestic or imported inputs, such as oil or raw materials, pushes up production costs. As firms are faced with higher costs of producing each unit of output, they tend to produce a lower level of output and raise the prices of their goods and services. This can have flow-on effects by pushing up the prices of other goods and services. For example, an increase in the price of oil, which is a major input in many sectors of the economy, will initially lead to higher petrol prices. However, higher petrol prices will also make it more expensive to transport goods from one location to another, which in turn will result in increased prices for items like groceries. Cost push inflation can also arise due to supply disruptions in specific industries, for example, due to unusual weather or natural disasters. Periodically, there are major cyclones and floods that damage large volumes of agricultural produce and result in significant increases in the price of processed food and both takeaway and restaurant meals, resulting in temporary periods of higher inflation. This is what happened recently here in Manitoba. This type of going back to the weather example, not this past summer, but the summer prior to that one, we saw an exponential increase in heat and had experienced another severe drought season. We had those heat domes and everything. I've done episodes on that before. But what that did was that it decreased the ability for farmers to produce solid crop yields. And there was just a fall in the ability for farmers in Canada to produce kind of the staples. Manitoba and Saskatchewan are massive. Like, basically all of the prairies are commodities-based economies. That's why we have weathered the inflation storm fairly well, and we have we did very well during COVID, and specifically coming out of COVID. Alberta, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan actually have some of the highest growth potential of the Canadian provinces right now, because we are commodities-based economies, and with inflation, commodities prices are increasing exponentially. But coming out of COVID, with a new growing season, with the poor growing season the year prior and high demand but low ability to produce, or disrupted ability to produce, that increased the price of what was able to be produced because the demand was still there. So that increased the price of wheat. We actually saw this past summer, because we were able to meet that demand, or not because we were able to meet the demand, but because we weren't able to meet the demand last time around, the prices for wheat specifically, hit a 14-year high during the summer. So with a really solid year of crop yield, Manitoba and Saskatchewan were able to take full advantage of that 14-year high. The issue was that that price that then gets pushed on to the next step. Go back to the car example I gave earlier. I can sell my car for 110% of the value because inflation has pushed the price up. But then in order to make a profit, the dealership again has to push that price even higher to make that money back. So at the end of the day, in terms of inflation, the two major macroeconomic factors that are driving that inflation are demand pull and cost push. In one case, you have demand for a product pulling the value and pulling the prices up, inflating the prices. And on the other, you have the cost pushing that price up. Demand, you have high demand for a product and low ability to produce it. So that brings the price up. You have solid demand, but you do not have the ability to produce it to meet that demand. So that pushes the cost to produce it up, and that pushes the prices up. Now, here's the third one that I find kind of interesting. This is inflation expectations. And this shows you how just expectations in and of themselves, our beliefs around inflation and our beliefs around future price increases, can drive inflation, can create, have very, it's where, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where our expectations drive real change and drive real costs. Inflation expectations are the beliefs that households and firms have about future price increases. They are important because expectations about future price increases can affect current economic decisions that can influence actual inflation outcomes. For example, if firms expect future inflation to be higher and act on those beliefs, they may raise the prices of their goods and services at a faster rate. Similarly, if workers expect future inflation to be higher, they may demand higher wages to make up for the expected loss of their purchasing power. Their behaviors, sometimes called inflation psychology, can contribute to a higher rate of actual inflation so that expectations about inflation become self-fulfilling. Given that inflation expectations can influence actual prices and wage setting, the extent to which inflation expectations are anchored has implications for future inflation outcomes. For example, if households and firms expect that inflation will return to the central bank's inflation target at some point in the future, regardless of what current inflation is, we describe their expectations as being anchored to the inflation target. When expectations are anchored, a period of higher inflation, perhaps resulting from a cost push event, will not cause households and firms to change their behavior, and as a result, inflation is likely to eventually return to its target. But if the inflation psychology of households and firms shifts and inflation expectations move away from the central bank's inflation target, they become unanchored. A period of higher inflation will become persistent because households and firms will expect inflation to be higher in the future and adjust their behavior accordingly. Consequently, it is much easier for a central bank to manage inflation if inflation expectations are anchored rather than unanchored. That's simple. So what the governments, world governments, are doing right now, specifically the U.S. and Canada, the federal banks, so the Bank of Canada, is raising the interest rate. It's doing that for a very specific reason. There is an expectation of inflation to eventually decrease to the target that the Bank of Canada has set, so that in and of itself is going to drive prices down. What the Bank of Canada is doing in the meantime, waiting for that inflation to come down, and the inflation's actually come down, I think, 3 months in a row now. But what this means is that what the government is doing is they are increasing the interest rate in order to stop companies from borrowing money and stop them from expanding. Why would they do this? Well, they're trying to control supply or help kind of push supply and demand in certain ways. So they can maneuver, they're trying to pull the economic levers that they have to force companies into a position where they have to drop prices. They don't have price controls because we don't have things like, you know, I've talked about, you know, the fact that Petro-Canada used to be a crown corporation and the government could set whatever prices it wanted. And that would, as a consequence, drive the market price for gasoline up or down, depending on what the government wanted it to do. And the government could always offer the lowest price possible because they didn't have to make a profit. They just needed to break even. But we don't have price controls like that anymore. We've never really had them. But we have, if we had price controls, we could just pull more economic levers than raising interest rates, which harm average borrowers. So it's increasing the risk that companies have to take on. But what these explanations don't get at is what was the actual impact that COVID had on our economy? And this is a very interesting thing. This is something that I've been studying for like 2 years now because it's been a part of my job to study this. But a major change during COVID was the fact that we were not going anywhere. People were still spending money. And in a lot of ways, we were sent, you know, the government has a vested interest in the economy running and the economy not crashing. So when COVID hit and we were all at home and businesses shut down and people weren't going outside, people weren't going to movies or restaurants or anything, the government stepped in and said, okay, there's a bunch of people unemployed. We can't have them homeless. We can't have them defaulting on their debts because that's going to just destroy our economy, because that's what happened during the Great Depression. People were not able to pay their, people in businesses were not able to pay their debts and pay their rents, and the whole economy crumbled because it sat on a house of cards. That's a simplified explanation, but that's, you know, one that helps facilitate this conversation. So the government stepped in and gave us CERB. It wasn't a totally perfect solution, but it was, they had to act fast. And they did act fast. So they were giving Canadians who did not have an option, who did not have, that were out of work and were not able to find work, money so they could pay their rent, they could buy groceries, they could continue to take part in the economy. And what this did was it gave people, in many instances, more money than they normally would have, which artificially raised average household incomes, not to an extreme degree, but it still noticeably raised it. But people had money now during a time when they had very specific options with which to spend their money. There's a very good reason why companies like Amazon, Loblaws, Walmart, all of these massive retailers posted record profits that were well higher than expectations during the pandemic, because we were all stuck at home. And what did people do? They were bored and they spent money. They upgraded, they did renovations on their homes. They bought new bicycles. During the pandemic, I bought a new computer. You know, people bought things because they had nothing to do. They couldn't go out and spend their money. They couldn't go on vacation. They didn't have to save to go on vacation. They didn't really save to make a big purchase. They just took on more retail activity. They spent more money on groceries. They bought more things than they probably needed because they had this money lying around. And when people have money, they spend it. Saving money is really hard for a lot of people. And the money was burning a hole in their pocket. So what happened was spending in a lot of certain areas increased. So companies like Amazon and Loblaws and Walmart saw huge increases in their profit margins because they were the only game in town. People were spending lots of money in these places because they weren't spreading their spend across a bunch of different things. And that was fine. And during the pandemic, we were you know, we were challenged by demand pull inflation and cost push inflation because we had supply chain issues. And, you know, there was just like a lack of certain things. Like, did you try and buy a pool during COVID? Because my family did. And it was not very easy because they were sold out absolutely everywhere. And the prices increased as a consequence. Bikes was another thing. Bicycles, the prices for bikes increased exponentially because, you know, the demand increased exponentially for in a very weird way. But coming out of COVID now, people's spending is normalizing. So companies are going back to seeing what their normal expectations, their normal revenues were going to be. And a lot of companies are trying to get in on the game because, you know, you have companies who are posting record profits during one of the worst times in human history. When a lot of people are going through retail therapy. Now, coming out of that, when people are going on vacation, people are going out to restaurants, people are going out to movies, people are going and doing the things that they couldn't do during COVID, and our spend is now normalizing because our lives are getting back to normal. Those companies still want to see those profits. They don't want to, it would be really bad for them to have profits that are lower than last year because that scares investors because they're enjoying this great year of great returns on their dividends because this company, whichever company you want to pick, saw massive profits. My dividends for Canadian Natural Resources just skyrocketed in value because commodities prices have increased for oil and gas. Call me a hypocrite all you want. It's the system that we live in, and I have to, you know, live. I have to have a future economically. But those prices increased, and the demand for those dividends to increase and those profits to increase have caused companies to want to one-up the revenues that they saw during COVID when we saw this exceptional change in how consumer spend was done. People simply aren't spending in the areas they were before. You know, the supply chain is normalizing. We're getting back to, you know, being able to produce food. We saw during the pandemic, there was a massive drought here in Canada and crop yields were severely impacted. And because there was lower crop yield, because Canada produces a lot of wheat and canola for the world, and produces a lot of agribusiness, specifically in the prairies, that drove prices up. So this past year, when crop yields normalized, farmers and wheat producers and canola producers were able to sell at a 14-year high and meet that demand. So those prices were based off of increased or decreased supply, which would be something, you know, like cost push inflation. And they were the beneficiaries of that. But these companies want to increase their profits year over year. So they're taking an exceptional experience and increasing their prices to meet the lowered demand. So now it's the lower demand that is kind of forcing or pulling price, that the companies are now pulling the prices up to try and reach the revenues that they had when demand was much higher. And it is corporate greed that is driving inflation and raising interest rates and hoping that will work is not going to get us anywhere because the benefits are still there for corporations and it is not hurting. It is hurting people, everyday people, and the government is not doing anything about that. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you very, very much for listening. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep that dial on 101.5. We've got some great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your download. You can catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show with Teebs, 5:30 to 6:30. And until then, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everybody.